Okay, great. And so welcome, everyone, to the October 30th, 2019, 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes teleconference. Craig, would you take the role, please?
Yeah, sure. I've got all the names here, so I'll just read them. Nita Renfrew, Ann Hendricks, Sherry Jacobs, Bonnie Faulkner, Charles Ewing Smith, Cheryl Curtis, Christopher Boleyn, Craig McKee, Fern Tishman, James Hufford, John O'Malley, Lynn Bradbury, Mike Cook, and Peter Ketchum. Did I miss anyone? Okay, so I guess we're good.
Okay, great. All right, so let's see. Are there any corrections to the minutes from last month? Hearing none, then they're approved as written. Okay, any objections to the agenda as it's written? Okay, hearing none, that's approved also as written. And we can get started with our speakers. We're really fortunate tonight to have two Christophers joining us. The first is Christopher Boleyn, and he's done so much for the 9/11 Truth Movement. It's an honor to have him here. And Anne, would you please do the introduction?
Sure. Well, I was writing it, so it's in half sentences here. I was going to dust off Sherry Aspen's from a couple of months ago because that was phenomenal. Christopher, just really talking about your integrity and your determination and tenacity in the movement. Everyone knows you, and I think that really indicates just how important your work has been because everyone knows you. You've done the most presentations. Your videos have been viewed. You have educated the world about 9/11, and we just want to thank you for your tenacity, for being an example to us, and for the compassion that drives you from the time that you were a teenager and were concerned about the Palestinians. And I think that the result of your work is going to be beneficial to the Palestinians whom you started out to help. On that note, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Before Christopher gets going, Cheryl, should we go to lecture mode so that we don't have any background noise to worry about?
Yes, let me do that here. Okay, so Christopher, we're going to unmute you. Okay, so you're now unmuted, Chris, and everyone else will be muted except for Craig and I. So.
Okay, and I want how long do you want me to be able to? How long should I be able to talk?
I would say whatever you want, but 30 minutes would be great.
Oh no, I'm not gonna go that long. No.
Okay. But, okay.
But,
whatever
okay,
you can
very
do.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, it's nice to be with you. It's nice to be with you again. It's a list of people that I know most of your names, and it's great to talk to you. Yes, I do hope that my work has been beneficial. You know, the important thing about my work is that it's independent. It does not have, I do not have a bias or an agenda. And I work from the evidence and from the truth. And that's really important. Some people will say, oh, he has an anti-Israeli bias. It's not an anti-Israeli bias. It's just that the evidence that I find time and time again points to Israeli involvement in the matters being discussed, whether it's 9/11 or the war on terror. Or today I just posted a little piece, for example, about the crisis in Iraq. Something like 250 Iraqis have been killed in the last month. And, you know, they're rioting in the streets of Karbala and Baghdad against the miserable economy and the lack of infrastructure and lack of jobs and the corruption. And this is after, 16 years of American occupation in that country. And you say to yourself, well, is this planned? If this is what the American occupation has brought to Iraq, How did we take the most advanced economy in the Middle East, in the Arab Middle East, and bring it to ruin, and leave it in such a bad state for so many years? This must be intentional. Well, it is intentional. the as I point out in this posting I did today, what is being applied in Iraq and Syria is very clearly the Yanon plan, the Israeli plan for the Middle East since 9/11. And the Yanon plan specifically calls for the dissolution of the Iraqi and Syrian state and military power and fragmenting the countries into ethnic statelets. Destroying their economy goes with it. And what I point out here is that the when the United States took over Iraq in 2003, they put a guy in charge of the privatizing the economy. His name was Michael Fleischer, and he became the head of the private sector development in Iraq, which meant privatization, basically, in 2004. He happens to be, of course, the brother of Ari Fleischer, who was the press secretary for George Walker Bush on 9/11 until 2003. Now, what's really interesting is that Michael Fleischer worked for an Israeli company. He was the president of an Israeli company called Bogan. And this Bogan has all to do with voice recordings and telephone messaging services, what have you, which is suspicious in itself. But he went from this Israeli company where the head of the company was an Israeli intelligence guy, Yoran Eitan, and he went to Iraq and worked on privatizing the economy. Now, reforming the Iraqi economy under occupation is in itself illegal, but it's the work that he did, and the reforms that the Americans made, the U.S. occupation made to the Iraqi economy, that is largely responsible for the deterioration of the Iraqi economy. In 1990, the year before the United States invaded Iraq, the Iraqi economy reached its highest point in GDP. And then, of course, the year after, it fell into the basement and had remained in the basement until 2004 when they started doing GDP data again. And Iraq never came back to the position it held even in 1990. So that's all part and parcel of the strategy. Same thing you look at Syria today. The Syrian government is being prevented from obtaining and having access to its own oil because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump's now swinging the troops back into Iraq, Syria, to supposedly keep the oil fields away from ISIS. But what persuaded Trump to keep the troops in Iraq was a meeting that he had with a guy named Jack Keane, who's a Fox News consultant, General Jack Keane, who came to the White House and showed a map to Trump with the oil fields and said that if the United States didn't secure these oil fields, the Iranians would take over the oil fields of Syria. And, of course, the oil fields of Syria are not very, very rich in any sense. They low production, pretty low reserves. But in any case, the real reason why, of course, Trump is holding on to the oil of Iraq, of Syria, at least at this point, is to keep it from the Syrian state. But I don't know where they're going to go with this because at some point, the Syrian army and the Russians are going to try to reclaim the eastern third of Syria, where the United States and the Kurds have occupied it. And unless they have some new ace up their sleeve, I don't see how the United States could be able to hold on to that position that that Trump has given himself, is to hold on to the oil. But that's the situation. Iraq and Syria have been decimated. The powers of their militaries and their states have been greatly weakened, and the countries are barely hanging together their territorial integrity, trying as much as they can. Factional division has been increased greatly in both states, and that is exactly the Israeli plan for both states. That was the main thing about the Yanon plan, was to take Syria and Iraq and break them up. That's been done. Now, getting back to the subject at hand about the Epstein murder, death, and his operation, Jeffrey Epstein. I saw today that there was a news report that the former medical examiner of New York, Michael Baden, spoke, an 85-year-old man, spoke about the his investigation, what he had found about Epstein, and it was that the breaking of the three bones in the neck of Jeffrey Epstein was highly indicative of murder, and that this would have been extremely uncommon for these bones to have been broken in strangulation, as Jeffrey Epstein is alleged to have committed, and highly indicative of murder. And Michael Baden has investigated prison murders in New York for decades, and he also pointed out on the, I think it was on Fox News, that it was extremely bizarre the way every single thing that could have gone wrong to allow the murder to go on, Epstein's murder to go on, happened. That the two prison guards fell asleep, that the camera in the cell was not working, that the camera in the hallway up to the cell was not working, that, you know, everything. That the fellow prisoner who had been in the same cell with Epstein had been taken out hours before. Baden said it was a couple of days before. But all of this indicates that the and this happened in a federal prison. All of this indicates that the murder of Jeffrey Epstein was done by somebody in the U.S. Department of Justice, because the federal prison is part of the Department of Justice, and it was allowed to happen, and that's pretty scary to think about, because this Epstein case is not a American case either. This is an Israeli operation. The Epstein operation is clearly an Israeli operation at the highest level. And we can tell that because of the there's a couple things. Firstly, there's the role of the Leslie Wexner, the millionaire from Ohio who owns Victoria's Secrets, who is part of a group called MEGA. And MEGA, like meaning very, very big, is the name of a group of American Jewish billionaires, people like Ronald Lauder and Steven Spielberg, and I think the Bronfmans are in it, and Leslie Wexner. And this group was created by Yitzhak Shamir in 1991. That's important to understand. In 1991, Israel was, after the first Gulf War, Israel was being pushed into a Madrid conference in which they were being pressured to make a compromise with the Palestinian people and come to some sort of solution. This is under George Herbert Walker Bush, his administration. At the Madrid conference, the Israelis were being, Yitzhak Shamir, of all people, was being pushed to make some compromise. He didn't want to do that. And he created this, it didn't succeed. The conference did not succeed in its goal. But Shamir did create this mega group, and Leslie Wexner is one of them. And their purpose is to support the State of Israel at the highest level, at the very highest level, when they really need something done, and these guys have the power and the ability to do it. Well, Leslie Wexner was the one whose money was being used to float to make Jeffrey Epstein's operation continue. At least we have Mr. Wexner. And so Wexner, being part of this mega group and very closely connected to Jeffrey Epstein, indicates again that this is an Israeli operation serving the Israeli government or military. And then the thing is that we have Ehud Barak, the former prime minister and secretary, chief military chief of Israel, having shown up at Jeffrey Epstein's house in New York, which is suspicious in its own, but he had many meetings with Epstein. He stayed at Epstein's apartment that was owned by Epstein. He would crash there, and he would meet Epstein many times. And what we find out is that Epstein, using money from Wexner, gave Barack something like $2.3 million in 1984 from money being managed by Jeffrey Epstein for the Wexner Foundation. Well, that's very, very interesting. And what's even more interesting is that you find that in the company that Ehud Barak was the money was for was a Carbine Group, which is like a enhanced 9/11 service, 911 calling service, kind of like a G5 version of 911. We have Michael Chertoff, who was the Assistant Secretary, Assistant Attorney General in 9/11, the man who oversaw the non-investigation of 9/11. He became an advisor to Ehud Barak's company, this Carbine company, again, which was funded by Jeffrey Epstein. So in this way, you have Israeli intelligence and the person who was masterminded the cover-up of 9/11. And that's a big part of my research. It's not so much the details of what happened on 9/11, but who we can see is behind the cover-up of 9/11, because the cover-up of 9/11 is the most essential aspect of the crime. Because if you don't have if you couldn't cover up the crime, you couldn't sell the deception to the American people that we had to go to the war on terror because of this terrible event. So that is a package deal. And when you look at my book does Solving 9/11, when you look at who covered up 9/11, you find this cast of characters, all of whom are tied to the State of Israel. Excuse me, Matt. And that takes us to, where we are today. Now, 18 years later, we have ongoing war on terror, the longest war in U.S. history, the most expensive war in U.S. history, and it's becoming increasingly clear all the time who's behind it. And even with the Israeli state in its situation of kind of like stuck in the mud here with no real leadership or government, we see that still it's the Israeli agenda that is being pursued in the Middle East with the American military support. It is not an American agenda. We do not have, for example, any strategic U.S. interest, national interest in Syria or in Iraq or Afghanistan for that matter. What's being done in these countries, especially Syria and Iraq, is we can clearly see that the agenda that's being pursued is the agenda of Israel. So that when, for example, Donald Trump the other day said in the beginning of October, early on, he said that he was going to pull the troops out of Syria. He was tired of this war. He's had enough. We've had enough. It's time to pull out. And you would think that the American government and the media would be pretty happy about this, saying it's the end of an illegal intervention. There's no legal justification for U.S. military presence in Syria. You'd think that the military and the media would say, yeah, that's great. No. He was criticized completely from A to Z. And yet, the pressure was put on. And the pressure came, like I said, in the form of Jack Keane and then Lindsey Graham. With Jack Keane went to the White House and showed Trump a map of Syria and convinced him that he's got to keep the troops there, because if he doesn't keep the troops around those oil fields, those nasty Iranians will take over the oil fields of Iran, of Syria, excuse me. And of course, like I said, the only reason that the United States is really holding on to those oil fields or trying to is to deny them to the Assad regime, the Assad government of Damascus, which is desperately in need of oil and cannot access its own oil. Thank you very much. So now if you'd like any questions, I can go to that mode.
Thank you very much, Christopher Berlin. I'm going to put it into Q&A. If you'd like to have a comment or a question for Chris, please do star 6. Star 6. And Chris, while we're waiting for people to get in the queue, I wanted to ask you, that Michael Baden, I had read somewhere that he was the guy who did the is in charge of the autopsy of JFK, and I think Martin Luther King also. Did I don't know if you had seen that or... Oh, do I have you muted? Oh, hang on a second. I do.
JFK was in the Naval Hospitals, but he may have. I don't know. He was in the Naval Hospital, I think, in... but I don't know if what Baden did, but he's been the examiner for New York City for a long time, and he's done a lot of prison work in prisons and things like that. So, but he said, like, I just for what it's worth, he said today that he was, I think he attended the autopsy. I don't think he did it. He said that the indications were that Epstein had been strangled.
Okay. Yeah, I just wondered, I had read that somewhere, and I just wondered how credible he was and why mm-hmm. they chose him, because he's like, isn't he close to 90 years old or something, or 85 or something?
He's 85.
Yeah.
85, yes.
Yeah, so anyway. Okay. All right, we have a question from James Hufford. James, go ahead. Okay,
Is it me?
Yes. Yeah, you're on, James. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I wondered what Christopher would have to say about the leadership of Israel with Netanyahu apparently, from what we can see, being voted out of office. Is he just going to remain prime minister without being voted back in, or what's happening mm-hmm. there?
Yeah, well, that's the way it works until they've given the mandate to Gantz, to Benny Gantz, I believe. And Benny Gantz had something like 28 days to form a government. He kind of faces the same problem as Netanyahu, although Gantz has the support of the Arab parties, which is a really good thing. Mm-hmm. Now, if Gantz cannot form a government within that 28-day period, then they'll go to another election, which requires a wait time before they can have an election. And during that time, Netanyahu will remain as like the lame duck prime minister. So you can see this thing, this could last a year because he's been like in that position for almost that long. Yeah, it's
right.
That's the situation.
Ooh. Thank you.
All set, Jim?
I want to say about Baden. Baden was the chairman of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. He was on the forensic pathology panel that investigated as the chairman of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. That was what was done for John F. Kennedy.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks for that. James, are you all set?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Sherry, you're up next. Go ahead.
Hi, Christopher. This is Sherry.
Hi.
I've been watching a lot of Adam Green, and you were on recently mm-hmm. with him, and I watched him last night too, and I guess he's very close to being taken down. That mm-hmm. I guess another channel I'm not real familiar with, I think it's called Red Ice or something, but it's another mm-hmm. you know, truther, pretty good on the truth channel, mm-hmm. was taken down. And so mm-hmm. And this is all regarding to the, you know, the Zionists and stuff, and mm-hmm. he went on and seemed to prove to me that Trump, you know, really does think he's the kind of the king of Israel, and he showed clips mm-hmm. where Trump says, "My first love is Israel." He says those words,
mm-hmm.
and they've got his mm-hmm. face on coins and communities named after him, and he talks about those Noahide laws, and it's fantastical as it sounds that they want to build the third temple from which to rule the mm-hmm. world. And all of this, but it seems like they're well on their way to this fantastical thing. I mean, they got away with 9/11, which is pretty damn fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
But can you speak mm-hmm. about those Noahide laws and all of that Adam is trying to educate us about a little bit? Thank you.
Well, I don't know that much about the Noahide laws, but it's the way that Sharia law is to Islam, I suppose. Noahide law is to Judaism. It's the laws from Noah, but this as you said, this is a very fantastic thing, and it's something that, you know, kind of like out of this world, the idea that you know, Israel would take the Temple Mount back and destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and rebuild the temple and start with animal sacrifices again and human whatever sacrifices they do. And it's also, I don't know, it's like I said, it's fantastic. It's fantastical. So I don't spend a lot of time, because that's not really my domain. It's not something I work with. I have worked with evidence and data of crimes, and I kind of like stick to that. Also, it's very disturbing. You know, it's like with the 5G. 5G is a problem all of its own. I know that Israel was somehow involved in creating this thing, and it's going to be rolled out. And people say that it can be used to, like, you know, kill people. We know that, you know, microwave weapons were used to kill people in Iraq. I've seen photos of that kind of thing, and it's that's real. Whether or not this fantastic idea of these Orthodox Jews comes to pass will remain to be seen. It's like Ari Fleischer, who I talked about earlier when I was giving my presentation there. Ari Fleischer belongs to this group of Chabad, and I know that Adam Green talks a lot about the Chabad movement, and this is a movement of Jewish supremacists, very clear Jewish supremacists, who believe that the non-Jewish people in the population are basically cattle, goyim. And, you know, with that belief system, in his mind and his way of life, this was the man who interpreted 9/11 for the President of the United States when it happened. This is the man who crafted the message that George Bush got up there and said that they attacked us because they hate our freedoms. This is the man who crafted the message that George Bush took us to war with in Iraq in March 2003. And when, after the invasion of Iraq was well underway in middle of 2003, Ari Fleischer left the scene. And that's when his brother came on the scene and took over the privatization of Iraq. And these, like I said, these are people who believe this Jewish supremacism, which Adam talks about so much. And it is, of course, a very dangerous thing, because any sort of supremacism creates a mindset where there is no consideration for the people who do not belong to that group. And that's, I think, is the most dangerous thing about Jewish supremacism, is that it's not only a threat to us, to us non-Jews, but it's a threat to Jews as well, because it creates this hostility and extremely antisocial behavior, if you will. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and Chris, just one last question for you. Why do you think they went after Jeffrey Epstein now? You know, why now? Why not? You know what I'm saying? Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, it may have been because, you know, there was too many girls coming forward, too many young women coming forward with evidence. And there was that one, I don't remember her name, but there was the one girl or woman who came forward with information, you know, just before this happened, and she had plenty of information. So it was, I think that it was like a fire, like a California fire that was getting out of control. And they said, we have to shut this down. And like, I see that, you know, the crown or the Prince of England, Prince Andrew, who's involved in this, his friends are trying to deny that that's him, because the hands in the picture are not chubby enough. Has a photograph of his hands around this young girl. You know, I think that the whole thing got a little bit too much attention. It was getting too much attention. It was growing too big, and I think they had to shut it down. They had to at least, you know, shut it down to protect the other people who are involved in it, the other victims, and the people who are behind it. And that's what they did. You know, as soon as Epstein was found dead in his cell, if he was found dead in his cell, as it seems to be, the whole investigation has just like ceased. It's just stopped. It's like, wait a minute. You know, I mean, Epstein, of course, is important, but the crimes that were committed and the involvement of American political figures and international people, this should be investigated. This island and these properties and all the records. No, that doesn't seem to be happening. And so it seems to be a cover-up, and the cover-up, to my mind, seems to be orchestrated at the highest level of the Department of Justice.
Yes, if not the
White House. it's very high up.
Yeah. All right, well,
actually,
thank you very
Cheryl,
much, Christopher.
Cheryl?
Yes.
Can I get a question in before we're done?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Just to follow up on that, Christopher, I mean, I've seen photographs that are supposedly of Epstein, and they seem very clearly not to be him. I mean, you can see clear differences. His nose is a different shape, and his ears are different. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you've seen the photograph that I'm talking about, and whether you think it's possible that you know, that he wasn't killed at all, that he was kind of
as the body taken out of the I've seen that.
Yeah, it doesn't look like him.
Yeah, I've seen that picture. Well, you know, it's like faces look a little bit different when a person has ceased to exist, has ceased to live. Yeah, but you'd have to take the look at the ear examination and what have you. But I don't know if they took him out of the you know, what needs to be presented is, of course, the autopsy itself. Along with the photographs and the ID, how he was identified, how they identified the body, and that this was Jeffrey Epstein. It's like it's very similar to what they did with this al-Baghdadi guy the other day. What they did with Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is it's just like a replay of what they did with Osama bin Laden. Even throwing the body into the sea, they took whatever remained of this Baghdadi and threw him into the sea, just like they did with Osama bin Laden. It's like I don't know, you know, we don't know. We can only go by what information we can verify for ourselves, whether Epstein has been killed or whether he's been kept alive and did a Huckleberry Finn operation with him. I don't know. But what we do know is that his operation was funded by very high-level Zionists and involved, you know, the former Prime Minister of the State of Israel.
Right.
And involved Michael Chertoff, the mastermind of the 9/11 cover-up, you know, of what happened on 9/11 in this country. Michael Chertoff played a key role in the cover-up of 9/11, and for that he should be held accountable, because I mean the destruction of evidence occurred under his authorization.
Can I say something? This is Gary.
Hang on, Sherry, just a moment.
Okay.
If you want to get back to me, Ann is next, and then we'll come back to you.
Sure.
Okay. Craig? Yeah, I'm sorry. She just signed up. So.
I was just going to make a remark to follow up on your Chertoff mention, just to mention that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was Michael Chertoff's cousin, Benjamin Chertoff, who was involved with the Popular Mechanics kind of attack on 9/11 truth.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So it all ties together, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Neatly. Very neatly, isn't it?
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Craig. And next, Anne, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. So, Christopher, I've been wondering for a long time about what is it like in Europe or internationally in regard to the 9/11 truth movement. What can you give us a what do you hear is their perspective, people outside the U.S., since we're since our country seems to be is asleep, what do the other folks in other countries, you know, is there?
Well, they you know, in Europe, the awareness of 9/11 is I don't know, it's probably on the same level as America, but they the media is as controlled, if not more, in Europe than in the United States. So if people have an interest in 9/11, you know, they will find something out, but you know, it's not real common. But they, you know, there's a group down. They had an event in Switzerland, for example, on 9/11 mm-hmm. this year, and Daniel Ganser and people, you know, had an event. But again, these European scholars about 9/11 don't go to the Israeli connection. Mm. And that's the same like we see in the United States. Like, I was not invited to any 9/11 function in the United States this year. I would have gone had I been invited, but I wasn't invited to any. And that's simply because, you know, in California and Colorado and East Coast, South, people who discuss 9/11, you know, do not want to go to the Israeli connection. And it's because they just simply don't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with that. They know that discussion that will cause friction, so they just avoid it. So they don't go there, and they instead they pull up their pet, you know, peeves. Like if they don't like Cheney and Bush, well, of course Cheney and Bush must be involved. They say it must be because that fits with their worldview. But it's not what the evidence shows. The evidence shows that 9/11 was an operation that was engineered, a military operation that was engineered by Israeli military intelligence starting back in the 1970s, and the War on Terror plot was engineered by the same people at the same time, because it is, of course, the other side of the coin. And this operation went through thanks to – and what we see with the Epstein case is that the Israelis have access to the richest, most powerful Jewish men in the United States who will serve their cause when necessary. So this is the kind of teamwork that they have. This is the kind of team that they have at their avail to do things like 9/11. And it's succeeded. And where the United States has really dropped the ball, as in Europe, but it's not a European problem, is that the media has not investigated 9/11. Instead, it's complicit. It's complicit in the cover-up. And our universities have not investigated 9/11, and our churches. You know, so all the institutions that we believe in our democratic society of somehow being responsible for standing up for the truth have failed us. It's amazing.
So what do you think we can do differently? Mm-hmm.
What can we do differently? Well, we have to, you know, pursue an investigation. But, you know, it's like extremely hard in the United States because the only authority to investigate it is the government itself, Department of Justice. And what we see, like here with this murder of Epstein as well, is that the Department of Justice is completely controlled and unable to, you know, do an investigation of itself or of the crime that changed America or the Epstein murder, whatever. So, you know, what I did is this year instead is I brought out my 7 years of articles that I wrote since 2012, and I brought out this volume 2 of original articles. And like the little piece I talked about, Ari Fleischer, is one of those articles, because you have to examine the people who are involved in 9/11, the people who are involved in the cover-up. We have the truth. We have a whole lot of truth out there. What we don't have is we don't have the political will to investigate the crime. And that is more, as I said, an expression of power, the power rather than the truth. It's the power to keep the lies going. The power to suppress the truth is still overwhelming.
Well, okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And Sherry, you wanted to ask another question. Let me unmute you.
I think it's so important to bring up, and Christopher, is about mm-hmm. 1967, Supreme Court Judge Abe Fortress, who was appointed by LBJ, mm-hmm. allowed dual nationals only with Israel to retain their citizenship, and that allowed them to be govern us, which violates the 1940 Nationality Act 401 Section E that says you have to be 100% American citizen. That ensures allegiance to our country. So I don't know why it's not talked about more. Chertoff, Zakheim. I mean, it's amazing the list of dual nationals with Israel that violates our most top national security. That's how they infiltrated. That's how they got the power of the politics. That's how they did it. That's the soft coup, in my belief. And then the hard coup was 9/11. And they got us.
Yeah.
They took over.
Yeah, there's no
I mean,
you know, yeah, there's no question about it. There's
A Zionist came to the church at my house, New Song Church. That's when Adam Green and everything, we came, and it was like walking into the Satan. But it's a huge church here in Oceanside by Camp Pendleton, filled with Marines. And a sniper came dressed in fatigues with his rifle up on stage talking about how it's good to kill Palestinians. And that was at the church filled with Marines. Now, if people don't think they're closing in fast, what about that?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
That's
You're absolutely right. You know, it's wrong that Chertoff, the son, he's a son of the Mossad. His mother was a Mossad agent. That this Chertoff, this dual national, you know, when you talk about dual citizenship, you have to be a little bit careful because not all of them are dual citizens. You have to find that out. But in the case of Chertoff, he is. I actually put the question to him directly, and it's because his mother was an Israeli. So according to the Israeli law, he is an Israeli national. Whether you're a citizen, you know, whether you have the full citizenship, and that means that whether you go and serve in the military at age 18, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, we cannot have dual nationals or dual citizens in positions of power in the United States, and that should be rectified, absolutely. But again, it's
like
a matter of us.
Zakheim, he got to be the Pentagon comptroller. Zakheim, he is a very criminal of 9/11. Zakheim.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I have not seen that Zakheim is a dual national. But I don't remember his parents were from New York. I don't recall. He may be an Israeli dual national, but I know Chertoff is, and a few others are. He may very well be. Zakheim, of course, is central to the 9/11 operation. Yes, as well. I agree. As controller at the Pentagon. Thank you.
So, Christopher, do you have time for one more question?
Sure, I have time.
Okay, and this will be the last one. James, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I guess I have a comment and a question. First of all, I believe that Zakheim is actually an official in the Israeli government as well as having been an official in the American government. So that would answer that question, I believe. I'm 95% sure. And also, my question is, have you read David Icke's new book, Target, and what is your judgment on that?
Trigger.
I've not read Icke's book yet. I can't say anything about it. I hadn't heard that Zakheim has any position in the Israeli government. That may be. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't had a chance to read David Icke's book yet. So.
Well, I highly recommend.
I know that
very good reading.
Good. Okay. Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Christopher. I really appreciate your coming on in the middle of the night. And
it's okay. Can I listen in? Can I listen in to Chris Gioia as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're always
great.
Welcome.
Okay. Thanks. So thank you. Is Chris with us? Chris Gioia with us yet, Craig? Craig somehow not. Let me just see here. All right, I'm going to put a stop. Okay. Now. Okay, someone just joined us with a phone number of entry starting with 516. Could you please identify? Is that Christopher Gioia? Nothing's happening there. Okay. Okay, hang on, people. There's something going on here. Okay. I see that Craig is not with us at the moment, so he was going to call Christopher Gioia when it was his turn. So he must be doing that. And Craig is back.
Hello, okay. Christopher Gioia on the line.
Okay, Christopher, does your number start with 516?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great. Okay, great. So we're thankful that you are joining us tonight. Really appreciate that. And Craig, you're going to do the introductions here, so please do so. Craig?
We got Chris, but not Craig.
Okay, Craig? Craig? He's unmuted. I'm not sure why. We're not, I see he's on.
I'll do the introduction.
That was the problem that I had when I called in. It kept muting.
Okay. Let me just see. I think he may have been trying to call back in. Let's give him a moment.
This is Mike Cook volunteering to do the introduction.
Okay. Why don't we do that so we don't keep everybody waiting? Let me just see for a minute. Oh, Craig is back on. Hang on. Craig?
Okay.
Yes. Mike Cook has volunteered to do the introduction. Are you okay with that? Are you there, Craig? All right. He's having trouble. So, Mike, why don't you go ahead and do that?
Can you hear me now?
Hear you.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. That was weird. I wasn't muted, but you couldn't hear me. That was very strange.
I had that happen a few minutes ago, too. I don't know why. Mike Cook has volunteered to introduce Christopher Gioia in your absence, but you're here. Do you want to do it, or do you want Mike to do it?
I'll do it.
Do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're prepared for it. Okay.
I won't make it a big introduction because I don't want to step on any of what Christopher is going to tell us about the story of kind of how the whole resolution happened and what the plans are following that. But Christopher is a fire commissioner in Franklin Square and Munson, which is a district very close to Queens, New York, and his district voted in July to pass a resolution, which I encourage everyone to read in its entirety. It's quite impressive. But it basically calls for a new investigation of 9/11 and even goes so far as to say that it is beyond any doubt that explosives were used to bring down the three World Trade Center towers. So it's a pretty impressive resolution. And the plan, I understand, I won't get into what the plan is because Christopher is going to tell us that. But Christopher's a fire commissioner and has been a volunteer firefighter for many years in Franklin Square in Munson. And he's a construction worker by day and does this on a volunteer basis. So I'm going to pass it over to Christopher. I hope I got all those facts right, but I'm sure you can fill all the stuff in that I left out. So welcome.
That's great. Hello, how are you?
Great.
Great.
All right, well, you, I'm not going to on what you said. Franklin Square and Munson Fire District did pass a resolution on July 24th in support of the petition that is before the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York in regards to unprosecuted federal crimes committed at the World Trade Center site on 9/11. And Franklin Square is involved with that because one of our members, Thomas Petzl, was also a member of the FDNY, because we're a volunteer fire department. He was killed that day, along with a few of my other friends. And Franklin Square did respond the following day, helping out with the FDNY at the with the rescue and the recovery. So Franklin Square Fire Department has been involved with 9/11 from the start, and we've been affected by it tremendously. And over the course of the years that have passed, it's become clear that the official narrative isn't accurate, and it's actually it's not true, and a tremendous injustice has been perpetrated on our country, and something needs to be done about it. So, after speaking with the other commissioners, I drafted a resolution, and we had our board meeting, and I brought up the resolution, and we called a vote, and it passed. And I guess the rest, as they say, is history moving forward from there.
Are you still with us, Christopher?
Yeah, I'm still here. Still here.
Okay. Are you waiting for questions, or is there more on your?
Yeah. What else did you want to know?
Where do you go from here? What's the plan moving forward?
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest.
Okay. The plan moving forward is to get the various fire department organizations in New York behind our resolution and behind the special federal grand jury investigation to get the grand jury impaneled and to look at the evidence that has been presented in the petition, which has been accepted by the United States Attorney for the Southern District. So along those lines, in the process of getting the support from the Fire Districts Association, State of New York, the Fire Districts Association County, Nassau County, the Fire Chiefs of Nassau County, the Fire Chiefs of New York State, and we're taking our initiative out to the entire United States, and we're seeking the support of every fire department or fire district across the country to support the petition before the United States Attorney, and we're actively pursuing that. That's what's going on now.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to put us in queue. If anyone has a question, it's star 6. I'm not muted.
Can I just ask a question while we're waiting for people to? Yeah, Christopher, I just wondered if you had had any contact with any other commissioners from different fire districts, even informally, and if you have, what kind of reaction did you get? I think he's muted now.
He's not muted. Let me just find that.
I got it.
Okay, thanks.
Hello.
Sorry, Christopher, you were muted there. You're back.
No problem. Okay. What was the question? I'm sorry.
Basically, I was wondering if you had had any contact yet with any other commissioners from other fire districts, and if so, what kind of reaction you got? Or is that something that's sort of still in the future?
No, I absolutely have been in contact with commissioners from other fire districts. I belong to the Nassau County Association of Fire Districts, and I brought this up at 2 meetings. And I have a motion pending for the November's meeting that I made a motion in support of the petition that's with the United States Attorney. So that's going to be going forward, and I'm anticipating that we will get the support of the Association of Fire Districts of Nassau County, which represents 72 fire districts in Nassau County. And that will be a huge plus moving forward. That's going to be a tremendous endorsement. And then using that to move forward, I'm going to go before the State Fire Association and let them know that I have the support of the County Association, and then we're going to take that nationwide. So I have spoken to other commissioners. They are receptive. Once I explain exactly what we're trying to do, they come on board with that, because nobody I've spoken to is against looking at any evidence related to the crimes of 9/11 and trying to get all of this before the grand jury and bring it into a court of law.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you, Craig. And next, Anita, go ahead.
Hello, this is Anita Renfrew. I was wondering how this all started, Chris. You know, like what was it that made you question the official story? At what point did you begin to question it? And what was it that got you to actually put together this petition? Was it talking to other firemen or what? You know, if you could tell us a little bit that story, that would be really interesting. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Anita. I would say that I first started questioning the official narrative. I'm a construction worker by trade, and I was just talking with some friends on the job, and we were talking about building construction. I'm a construction surveyor. I work in the heavy construction industry, construction of buildings, tunnels, bridges, and whatnot. And we got around to talking, and one of my friends started talking about Building 7 and how Building 7 came down and it wasn't hit by a plane. And I didn't know anything about Building 7. So,
How long ago was that you started talking?
I would say that was in 2012, 2013. Mm-hmm. Probably about 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And then one thing led to another, and the more I investigated, the more I wanted to investigate even further. And I was really interested in the collapse of Building 7 and why that building came down. And it wasn't hit by a plane. There's no jet fuel. And just looking at the pictures, it was pretty obvious to me that, you know, that this the building was brought down by controlled demolition, because you can't have a symmetrical collapse from asymmetrical damage. And the building wasn't a raging inferno, and it would have been the first time in the history of steel frame buildings that fire actually caused a building like that to come down. So that's what, Anita, that's what got me started. And then I pursued that. And it brought me to the point where I'm being in the fire department. I ran for office for fire commissioner. And now that I was a fire commissioner, I was in a very unique position to do something for the family of one of my friends who was killed, Thomas Hetzel, who's with FDNY Ladder 13 out of Manhattan. And I was speaking with his widow, and we were talking about all of this, and I'm very good friends with the family, and I said, you know, I think that that I could try and do something for you here. And I said I could use my power as a fire commissioner to try and pass a resolution in support of a new investigation to try and get to the bottom of what happened. And I told them, I said, you know what? I said, it may just be very symbolic, but at least it's something for the family. I did it for the families of my friends who were killed. And moving forward, it really turned into something. So it didn't start out as we're trying to change the dynamics of everything. It started out as just trying to do something for the families of my friends and for those who were killed initially. And then things got big, and I would say they got big real fast. Anita?
So you believed the official narrative up until that point?
Yes, absolutely.
There
was no...
Yeah.
Anita, there was no reason for me to question it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we were a firm believer in that. And then you know, seeing is believing, and a picture is worth a thousand words. And what you see on the videos, and then when you start digging into it, you're the what you believe, it's really tough to swallow. It is. It's a tough pill to swallow. I would say that.
Thank you very much for doing this. We appreciate it greatly, even though we're not families. We're families in a different sense.
We're all part of the human race, and we're all good people, and we all believe in the same things. You know, we all want what's best for our families and our children, and you want to live up to some ideals. You know, you have to have some ethics. You have to believe in something, and I think that, generally speaking, most people do. And what happened on 9/11 was just—it was evil incarnate. It was just tremendous evil that was perpetrated on our country and our people. And that's something that you can't let go. You just can't. And that's something that we all have to fight moving forward.
Are you finding that other firemen and fire departments are receptive to what you're saying?
Anita, being in Nassau County, New York, and with other firemen, there is pushback from some firemen who are in denial. So I would say that if you have maybe a group that they're in denial, a group that doesn't really comment, and then you have a group, it's like even split. So 33 1/3% are going to be in denial, and 33 1/3 are just not going to say anything. And then the other third is going to be, you know what, you're on to something here. So, there's some pushback. But once I explain, you know, what I'm trying to accomplish, I tell them I'm not engaging in conspiracy theories here, and that, you know, I want to stay within the facts that can be proved, and that we should look at all the evidence that has not been looked at thus far. And I think that most people will agree with that. They don't have a problem with that. And I don't go any further than that. I prefer to stay on safe territory when dealing with the fire department, because it's such a sensitive issue. It is. It's after 18 years, especially in this area that I live in, we're right on top of it. It's still an emotional issue for a lot of people.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
Okay. Great. The next question is from Ann Hendricks. Go ahead, Ann.
Gosh. Christopher, we really are grateful that you have come to the front of this battle, and the people here represent thousands or many more who stand with you, and not just stand with you, but people have been giving everything to seek justice for your people, for New Yorkers who were the victims and the families, and for the many also who have died and been victimized in the consequences of 9/11. So thank you. I just want you to know that we are doing everything we can to bring justice forward. Without knowing you, without being part of your family, we are for you. And we are behind you, and we support you. So thank you.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate that. It's comforting to know that there are people out there who are supportive. And, initially after the resolution was passed, there was all kinds of things going on. It really did take a lot of people by surprise. Like I said, it wasn't really we didn't have any grand plans for the resolution. Following the resolution, it was but it really turned into something, and it's just nice to hear the support. There was some initial pushback from people in chat rooms and whatnot. But then the response, the overwhelming support that came in totally, I would say that it was 98% for and 2% against. That's how strong the response was coming back in. So I thank you for your support, and I just want you to know that me personally, I'm not going to stop until justice is done for all the people who were murdered. And there's a lot of good people in this country who feel the same way, and we're going to do something about it. That's what this country is all about.
Okay. Well, I have a question, too. But
yes.
I think you just coined kind of a new term has been coined, because we are the pushback. We are the pushback against the corruption. And that's really the another name for the truth movement. My question to you is about Building 7. In the lawyer's petition, Exhibit 25, you'll find a testimony by Barry Jennings, who was rescued out of Building 7. And
right.
You probably are pretty familiar with that. And I have a question. I'm researching it. And I want to know, he said there were bodies in the basement, or not basement, whatever area that he was pulled out of, there were bodies. He was stepping over bodies. And the media, the government has told us that that building was evacuated. But they were there during the time that the towers were falling down. So Barry Jennings and the other fellow, Michael Hess, were taken
yes.
out by firefighters. And I'm wondering, how can we find out who they were? This was on the news. They said that a team of about 10 firefighters came in. They cut a hole in the wall, or they made a hole in the wall, and they were able to rescue Mr. Jennings and Mr. Hess. So do you think there would be any record of that? Or can you keep your ears open for firefighters who did go to Building 7? Because they told him not to look down. He knew that he was walking over bodies. So this needs to be researched. If you can learn anything about that, who might have entered that building and rescued Hess and Jennings, that would be excellent.
I think the lawyers committee is working on that. I know that they're looking at the available videos of people who were coming in and out that they could get their hands on, and they're trying to identify people who were in and out of the building. I really don't know of anybody that was identified, from the fire department who took Mr. Jennings out of the building, or Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Hess.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're
okay.
welcome.
All right, next we have a question from Sherry Jacobs. Sherry, go ahead.
Hi, Chris. This is Sherry. I'm the lady who sent you a list of suggestions for your website. I do a lot of data entry with Dave Cole. For the last couple
yes.
of years, I helped him do research.
Oh, okay.
So now you can put a voice to the list. But the main thing I wanted to do is to thank you so very much. I second what Ann said. We are so thankful for you. From the bottom of my heart, I get choked up. I mean, I've watched your press club speech so many times, and I cannot even get through it without getting choked up. And I thank you so much for what you're doing. And what you said there a few minutes ago, you said that you were unaware of Building 7. That, to me, is incredulous. How could you be aware of it? Weren't you there that day?
I wasn't at Ground Zero during the attack. I was across
okay.
the river. I was working. I was approximately a mile and a half north of lower Manhattan on the Brooklyn side of the East River, which isn't very far. And if you saw where I was working from the Twin Towers, the next day my fire department responded to Ground Zero. We actually sent a rescue truck and an engine to the scene.
And when was the first time you heard that recording of Ario Palmer and how he made it all the way up to, like, the, I think it was the 78th or 76th floor and radioed
yes.
in that story that you tell? When were you become aware of that story?
I was reading through the fire department transcripts of the radio transmissions of the firefighters, and I came across that. I was just looking for what they were saying, and it's unbelievable what the firemen were saying, because they're all commenting about explosions, and it was pretty obvious why the tapes were suppressed until after the 9/11 commission had disbanded. So I was reading that, and then I couldn't believe what I was reading about. You know, I came across the part where it was about Battalion Chief Ario Palmer, and that really, that took me by surprise, and I just felt that now there's a story that needed to be told, that this man, this brave and courageous firefighter, made it, and from all accounts, I actually was speaking to some of the members who were in his squad during the course of their term at the we just had an event in New York City at the All Souls Church on November 7th, and some of the members of his friends of his were there, and they told me that if there was one guy who was going to make it up to the fire floor, it would have been him. So he was real go-getter, and to me, it was just a tremendous story that here's a guy who made it. You know, he was so determined. He made it. He fixed the radios. They were having problems with the radios. Not only did he fix the radios so they could communicate, but he gets up to the fire floor, which, if you could make it to the fire floor, being a fireman, that's where you want to be. And he was at the fire floor, and he was above the fire floor, and he was below the fire floor, and he surveyed what the damage was, and he made that radio transmission about, he had, and he said it very calmly too, they had two isolated pockets of fire, and he said we should be able to knock it down with two lines. So you have an experienced firefighter who was up there right at the point of impact where the plane hit. Now you have fire, okay, and you know what you can put out with. You could put the fire out with. So he knew he could knock it down with two hand lines. So that tells me that, yeah, that the damage was severe and you did have fire conditions. But and then a minute after he gave his last transmission, the South Tower collapsed. And that infuriated me, because that told me that, you know, somebody else was monitoring the transmissions and they knew that the fire department had made it all the way up there to the fire floor and that they were going to put the fire out. They were getting ready to put the fire out. And if they put the fire out, then you take away the reason for the building collapsing. And I took that to heart. And you know what? That's the story that I wanted to get out there, just to let them know
that's
that
you very
had,
important
you had a
story.
Yes,
that is a
very
important
story.
Yes. And also, You're a union too. I was wondering if you've ever talked to any of your union leaders or anybody at your union about this.
It's funny you ask that, because I am in the middle of drafting a letter to the president of Local 15 and the executive board and the attorney, and I'm going to ask them for their support of the grand jury investigation. I want to get their support. I want to get their endorsement on that, and I have a pretty good chance at getting that done, because Tommy Hetzel's father, my friend who was killed, Tommy Hetzel's father was a member of Local 15, and his brother is also an operating engineer. So they're totally familiar with the Hetzel family. So if I could get the endorsement, well, I'm going to be reaching out to the largest trade unions in New York City, and I'm going to be seeking their endorsement for support for the grand jury investigation.
Okay, well, if you need any help, I work with Dave, so let me know any type of help that you need. And also, if you get that endorsement, let me know, because my cousin is International Vice President of Local Number 1 of the IBEW. And so we'll get it. Yeah, if you get that, my grandfather was too. I come from a long line of sparktricians, so in St. Louis. So if you get that, then I'll get it to my cousin Frank, who is not awake yet. So, you know.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much, sir, for everything you do, and let us know what we can do to help. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Quite welcome.
Okay, next question is from Lynn Bradbury. Lynn, go ahead.
Hi, Christopher. I just want to thank
Hello,
you
Lynn.
For your extreme eloquence and bravery in speaking out. And yesterday I watched a recording of Tulsi Gabbard being hosted by the 9/11 families. And they all seem to be quite believing in the official story. And I wondered if you've had any contact with them or attempted outreach with them. And also I wonder if you've seen any New York Times reporting of what you're doing, which I think is so important, and thank you again.
All right, Lynn. I would say to the first part, no, I haven't spoken to any of those family members. I've spoken to a few other family members, and there are groups that of family members that do not believe the official narrative, and I think that mainstream media is going to ignore that group, and they're going to embrace the group that agrees with the official narrative. And the ones that I have spoken to, they know that there's a lot of information out there that hasn't been looked at. They know that the government isn't telling the whole truth. Whether or not they embrace the fact that there's a lot more going on, but they do know that there's something wrong with the official narrative.
You mean even the ones that hosted Tulsi Gabbard know there's something wrong with the official? Because those people seem to be just trying to get still the release of the 28 pages, and Tulsi even expressed, you know, she believes in the hijackers and all that.
There's an interesting story to this, because the government just agreed to release the name of there were two Saudi government officials, they finally released the name of the last one, but only to the attorney of this group of family members and survivors. There's a lawsuit out there against Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And these gentlemen worked at the Saudi embassy, and they were Saudi intelligence, and they aided and abetted a couple of the hijackers, and the media isn't focusing on that, but the family members know that Saudi Arabia is involved somehow,
and it might lead somewhere important and legitimate, I suppose, or it could just be a limited hangout. I don't know.
It may. I think that they need to pursue that. I think that the government is obviously, you know, took them 18 years to release this name, that they don't want the link to Saudi Arabia to be exposed. But it is there, and you know, most of the hijackers were Saudis. And why did we attack Iraq if the hijackers were Saudi Arabian? That to me doesn't make any sense. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Saddam Hussein was diametrically opposed to the beliefs of bin Laden, and we wound up attacking Iraq. We should have attacked Saudi Arabia, if anything.
Do you wonder if information regarding Saudi Arabia might lead to implicating Israel in any way? Or have you thought about that?
I think that they're all involved somehow. I think the Saudis, the Israelis, They're all involved somehow, and it has to do with the money. If you follow the money trail, the 9/11 wasn't really a crime of religion or politics. I think it was a crime that was motivated by the root of all evil. It's money. And the big money interests are involved. And then the Saudis have a lot of money. The Israelis have a lot of money. And there's interest in the United States. I would say that the military-industrial complex stood to make a lot of money with these wars, these never-ending wars that are occurring over in the Mideast.
Well, your candor and your awareness and your courage are refreshing and much appreciated. And stay safe. We thank you.
Thank you very much. You
okay.
Too.
Okay. Okay, and we have one last question from Mike Cook. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Hey, dude. I'm also...
Hello, Mike.
Yes, Mike Cook here online.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm also a construction worker. I'm a union carpenter. Been thinking about trying to get my union involved. I've been involved with the guys I work with, obviously, and they're pretty much on board now. You know, I mean, they are. As far as you're reaching out to the firefighters, I know that it's really difficult. Try their wives and their kids. I'm serious. Yeah, try their wives and their kids because they want their daddy to come home.
They definitely do, Mike. You know, my friend's daughter, you know, he's not there. It's just Diana, his widow, you know, and the whole family is there. But she was young when it happened, so she doesn't remember, you know, what Tommy was like. And my other two friends, you know, they never had a chance to get married and have kids. You know, it's definitely, you know, it's an emotional issue. And I would say that with the local union and your friends who are being supportive with the carpenters, I think that, like I said already, that I'll be reaching out to the various trades, the unions, and trying to get endorsements from them in that regard. I think we could do that. And I would also say to you, if you wanted to, and to others who are listening, if you want to be supportive, the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Mr. Berman, does have an email. They do have an address, and I would just encourage people to email the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York and inquire about the grand jury investigation as to its status and what's going on with the 9/11 investigation. And that would keep pressure on that office to do their investigation. And I encourage people everywhere. I just tell them, keep, you know, just email the office, call the office, mail the office, and just let them know that people out there are aware that there is a grand jury investigation into unprosecuted federal crimes committed at the World Trade Center site on 9/11, and that is so important because when you keep the pressure on and you put the spotlight on something, then you get action. So I would say that, Mike.
Amen.
All right, thank you, Mike, for your question.
Could I get a question in? At the end here?
Yeah, we have someone else on the queue. Do you want to go first or wait for them?
Doesn't matter.
Okay, go ahead with your question, and then Ann is next, and then that'll be it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Christopher, I wanted to just run by. I had a sort of a concern about the whole thing, about the, how this is going to proceed with, you know, the fire departments and all these different sort of approaches that you have the that are in the plans to make to different levels of government and things like that. The thing about the grand jury is that, you know, there's always the possibility that the grand jury thing might not work out, or they might say, yeah, we convened one in secret and, you know, we didn't find anything. And so, you know, that's all we're doing or something like that. I mean, we hope that doesn't happen. But so my concern is that if you're just asking different fire departments, if you're saying we want you to support the grand jury petition, I'm concerned what happens if the grand jury petition falls, then all that momentum that you've got kind of comes to a halt. And I'm wondering whether you would also include, you know, looking for a new sort of a general seeking a new investigation thing as well as the grand jury, so that if the grand jury doesn't work, you can still keep going.
You bring up a very valid point. And if the I'm going to be sending a letter out to fire departments all across the country, and I'm going to ask them of them two things. And first off, I'm going to ask them to support the Franklin Square Munson Fire District resolution, which right at the end calls for an investigation by any and all entities and agencies to investigate, reinvestigate 9/11, and then also be in support of the grand jury. Now, you're absolutely right. The grand jury, they could decide that, you know what, that there's nothing to it, and then that will be the end of that. I hope that that doesn't happen. I don't think that that's going to happen. I would still, at the end of the day, I would hang my head high and know that I did my due diligence in bringing or helping to bring this action about, that I tried to do something rather than not do anything at all. But there are other avenues after the grand jury. We've reached out to congressional leaders, congressmen and senators. On September 11th, I was at the at Washington, D.C., and had a press conference at the National Press Club, which you know about, and then we headed off to congressional offices. So I did establish a dialogue with my representatives, and I could continue to pursue it at a federal level with regards to that. And pretty much that's the only avenues apart from just getting the word out and trying to enlighten people to that to the facts, to what really happened, and then through information, just getting the information out to people, general awareness of people will be more aware of, you know what, maybe things didn't happen the way the government said it happened, and maybe it is time for a new investigation. I think a page has been turned here, and I think that people are more open to talking about 9/11 now, more so than ever. I think the shock and awe of everything has wore off, and that a lot of people are engaging in a dialogue, that they're past it, and even more so now that this resolution has gotten out there. And I know it's been around the world. I've gotten emails from around the world, and I could see it on the internet, that this thing has traveled far and wide. And I think it's really got people talking. And I think that people are more comfortable talking about it. And the more people talk about it, the more people are going to look at it. And the more you look at it, the more you're going to know that there's something not right. And then the more support that's going to generate. So the fire has been lit, and it's burning, and it's going to get bigger. This is just going to get bigger. It's not going to go away, because what happened was wrong. It was tremendous evil, and it really boils down to, you know, a basic issue, and to me it's good versus evil, and we have to stand up here. We really do, because if we don't, then something even worse is going to happen, and that's something that we need to avoid.
Right. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. And Christopher, we have one more question if you have time for that.
Sure, no problem.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I guess. Oh, yes. Anne, are you ready to go?
Sure. You kind of addressed that with your last paragraph there. It was about your visit to the congressional offices. Could you give us an impression of your visit there? How did you find them, or how did you? I mean, I know now you know you went with the AE delegation, but what was your experience, your impression of the?
And the staffers that we spoke to were very receptive, and they listened to what we had to say, and Ted Walter from A&E had his laptop, and he was able to show them pictures of Building 7 coming down, and without coaxing, the staffers just came right out and said that's controlled demolition, and then we told them, you know, that's Building 7, and that was the third building that came down that day, and they didn't even know about that, and that really piqued their curiosity. So I would say that they were receptive. Whether or not that got translated on to the senator or the congressman, I didn't meet with any of the senators or congressmen. I met with their staff. The next day, a couple of the senators and congressmen actually were contacted in person by other members. I had left by that time. So, but I, for the people that I spoke with, the aides and the staff, they were polite, they were cordial, they listened to us, and they were actually surprised to see the evidence that we had brought with us to back up what we were saying. And I think it was very powerful because the group that I was in actually had Helen McIlvain with us, and we also had Dave Meiswinkel, who's also the executive director of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. So we had a pretty good delegation of people, and they did the right thing. They did. We were well embraced, I would say.
Great, thank you.
I walked away feeling good about it. I didn't feel like it was a wasted effort. I walked away feeling good. I know how the government operates, and I understand that there's always a chance that then they'll say yes to your face, and then when you walk away it's going to be no. I understand that, so there is always a little trace of cynicism, so to speak, but hope is the only thing that you have to hang on to sometimes. So
yes.
I choose to remain hopeful, and I choose to remain the optimist always.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Yes, and Christopher, there's no more questions. I just wanted to thank you again and echo what everyone else has said, how much we appreciate what you're doing. And I watched your speech also in the press club, I guess it was, and it was very moving. You're a great speaker and talk from the heart. And so, again, thank you. And you're welcome to stay on. We're going to be talking about announcements and different things right now. You're welcome to stay and listen, or I know you're probably very busy, so feel free to hang up also. And Christopher Boulin, thank you also for being on the call and for hanging in there. And again, you're welcome to stay and listen to us or hang up, whatever works for you.
Thanks, Chris. On the program. Are you quite welcome?
Thank you, Christopher. Really appreciate it. All right, good night.
You're welcome. All right, good night. You take care now.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so if everyone can bear with me a minute, I'm going to take this out of Q&A, and I'm not sure what that'll do, but just bear with me a minute. I want to get everyone unmuted, so just a second. Okay, so if you do *6, you can unmute yourself, and or maybe I can do that here. Let me see. Okay, there we go. All right, so everyone is unmuted, unless you want to be muted, and that's *6. So at this point in the program, we're going to go into announcements and new events or whatever anyone has to talk about. I first want to just say that Craig and I were looking at the dates, and I think he put it in the agenda for the next meetings. And as it turns out, November 20th doesn't work for me, and we couldn't come up with another date in November with Thanksgiving. And Christmas and New Year's are both on a Wednesday. So we decided to go with one date of December 4th and combine the November and December meetings into one. It'll still only have two or three speakers, so it won't be like a five-hour night or something. But so if anyone has any thoughts or comments on that, we're welcome to any feedback on that. But that's kind of what we came up with as the most doable. Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Perfect.
That sounds good.
Everyone okay with that? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, then that's what we'll do if everyone's all set with it. Please email us if you have any other thoughts. Okay, and does anyone have any announcements or comments or other business?
How do I email Berman? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, you go on to his website. Go on to Berman's website. There's a Berman, he has a website, Jeffrey Berman, New York. And you could also call right after they first filed, about a month after I called. And I just wanted to support, tell them my support. And somebody called and answered the phone and said that they would give the message to Mr. Berman. So, and then I wrote a letter too. So you can write a letter too. I thought writing letters would be cool because it's a paper thing that they're getting a paper thing. It's a tactile experience. They have to open it and, do their security stuff, and it's going to get to somebody's desk. So that, to me, is kind of cool, too. But I think you can email them. I never emailed them, but you can send a letter and you can call.
I just Googled Jeffrey Berman. Is that what
okay.
I do?
Yes.
Okay.
U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman, Southern District of New York, and he has a website.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments or announcements? I have one if anyone's thinking about it. I don't know if you all know that Max Blumenthal was arrested over the weekend. He's a journalist and very critical of Israel and did the movie Killing Gaza, which can't get aired anywhere because of how they censor that. But he was arrested over the weekend. They came to his house, his apartment, and I guess they were in full, what do they call it, like attack mode or something. And they said if he didn't open his door, they were going to break it down. They put him in shackles, and he was in jail for, 2 days before they released him. And he's being charged with, which he says he definitely didn't do, but when the Venezuelan embassy was being occupied by activists, he was helping them get food inside, and now 5 months later, they are arresting him, saying that he assaulted someone at that, which he said he never did. So to me, that it seems like more attacking journalists more. It's kind of frightening to me. Anyway, I just wanted to share that. And he has
and
the website.
In this country? That happened in the United States?
Yeah, I think he lives in Washington. It's either Washington or New York.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe is there anyone who can write a letter to somebody to help support him? Seems like we should.
I can send you around the email I got on it from the Embassy Protection Collective that are also going to court over this. And they're asking for money to afford their lawyers. So
maybe Jewish Voice for Peace would help them. Maybe.
Maybe.
Go to the gray zone for updates.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Okay, any other comments or announcements?
I have something, Cheryl.
Yes.
Or were you about to say something else?
I just wanted to know what topics people would like to hear on the call and what if they had any suggestions for speakers. So
okay, can I make my comment before we
Absolutely.
Go into that discussion, though? Because, that'll...
Yeah.
Be another tangent.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention, I know not everybody on the call is part of the listserv, and it's just a minority. Well, it's about 27 people, but it's not always the same people that are on the call. I just wanted to inform you that I got a very kind of a, I wish I was better at IT stuff, because a message from Yahoo, which is where our group is hosted, telling us that no more user content would be uploaded to the site after October 28th, and I still don't really even know what that means. It sounds like maybe it means like things like photos, I don't know, but it also says that as of December 14th, that it sounds like we're going to lose the whole archive of our listserv, which is, 20,000 messages going back eight or nine years. And then they give an instruction of how you can migrate that to somewhere else. And to me, it's like another language. I have no idea what they're telling me to do. So it's, I throw that out there for people's consideration. If somebody's really a whiz at this kind of thing, maybe they'd like to get in touch with Cheryl and I, because I don't want to lose all those messages. I mean, I know people don't maybe look at them that often, but it just seems a shame to have the history of the group kind of wiped out that way. And the interesting thing was, I had considered when we were talking about switching to another platform, when Jonathan Mark was asking us to remove his name as an administrator, I looked at this one that's very popular called IO, the letters I and O. And anyway, I just looked at their terms of service, because I was trying to figure out how difficult it would be to transfer everything to a group on that. And one of the things they prohibit are discussion of conspiracy theories. So, and they actually specify anti-vax groups. And there's even one other thing they mentioned. They don't mention 9/11 specifically, but they Pizzagate. They mentioned Pizzagate. So, but who knows if the rest of them? Maybe they're all like that now. I don't know. But anyway,
that's pretty scary. That's really stuff.
Sorry, I didn't hear. What was that?
I said that's pretty scary that they're doing that.
That they specify. Anyway, so I do want to figure out before the 14th of December how to somehow save the archives of our site so that they're not lost permanently. So that's it.
One suggestion on that, Craig, is that Bruce Barton Bruce is pretty tech savvy. Maybe he could help us with that.
Okay.
Ask him.
Yeah. We'll check with him. That's good.
Okay.
It might. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Lynn Bradbury. It might, in the most dire eventualities, it might be quite good that we all retain each other's emails, or even snail mail, as one friend told me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, theoretically, we're getting email notifications of what we're doing in these groups, like now. So we have all those messages, from recent interactions. It's just the stuff going back years that we would lose.
Well, who keeps the audio recordings like of tonight? Tonight was one of the best ones, I think, with the two Christmas.
Oh, yeah, audio is not a problem because it's the conference call service. It saves on their site, and then I download it, and then I upload it to my own site. So those are not going anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. So if anyone has any thoughts or ideas on that, please email us or contact us, and so we can move forward with that.
Okay. I'll ask
Dave
Cole. He's kind of busy every.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind. Thanks.
Yeah. And does anyone have any thoughts now on speakers or topics that you'd like us to look for speakers on? Anything? Any thoughts or suggestions?
Yeah, I'm Nita.
Oh, boy, that.
Nita Renfrew.
Yeah, hi, Nita.
What about
Robert Kennedy Jr.? He's... He's a I went to hear him the other day at Riverside Church, and they actually cut the mic when he came on. The church did, and the security told us all to leave the building.
On what pretext?
This was last week, and he is excellent.
On what pretext did they tell you to leave the building?
He talks about the vaccination stuff, and you know how the lobby is twice the size of the you know, the oil lobby, and you know Glaxo is now a partner of Google and all this sort of thing, and it's pretty amazing. And he's come out and said that there was a conspiracy in the JFK assassination. He's the only family member, so you know he may want to talk about that. I don't know. But
you know how I can get his contact information, Nita?
Well,
do you have any?
He has a, you know, Children's Health Defense is his newsletter, his organization, Children's Health Defense.
Children's.
Okay, I'll look there. Yeah.
Yeah, you can just you know.
I can send you the link.
Find it on the internet, and there's a contact thing on it. But he's really good.
He's fantastic.
Nita, what pretext did they give for pulling the mic? I mean, for telling
Well, they didn't give us.
Leave.
They didn't give any pretext until, and then afterwards, it was sort of they rumored that the assembly hall was to capacity. Well, you know, for 4 hours, people had been speaking, and you know, there were people standing in the back who didn't have seats, but it wasn't like they were packed. There were just people standing like there always are at Riverside Church and so on. And, you know, it wasn't like you couldn't get past them or anything. And for 4 hours, there was no problem. And then he was the last speaker because he was hosting the event. And they had tried to cancel it a few days before when Sharpton was hosting it. And then I guess he took over and he got the space. And so they let him speak for about 5 minutes. And then somebody came up and said, they cut the mic and they said, the event is over, leave. And the security people went around pushing us out. So he continued the talk out on the sidewalk. But he was starting to give names of people that had lied to him about the vaccinations in the government offices and so on. And
it's a huge issue. He and Del Bigtree are very brave patriots.
Yeah.
Kennedy flew across country a few months ago to engage in a debate at Yale, and after he had arrived in Connecticut, the three doctors who were to have debated him said they were not coming. So there was this hashtag going around, Yale bailed, and he gave his talk anyway, but, you know, the other side apparently has nothing to say, and there's a lot of censorship going on.
Robert Kennedy Jr.
And it's Children's Health Defense is the name of the organization, and it's a newsletter. It's a free. It's very good.
I'll contact him. Yeah.
What is the name of the organization?
Children's Health Defense.
Okay. After 9/11, I joined a trauma group, and we learned that Robert Kennedy's Jr.'s office, he was for environmental safety, was destroyed, you know, right after 9/11. He had an office on Ground Zero. So, thank you. Mm-hmm. Children's
Defense? So, I'm sure he would want to speak because he's being shut down every place.
Right. The question is, does he want to be connected with 9/11? You know, so we'll see. And I know that Del Bigtree is not so crazy about 9/11, so we'll see how that works. But I will reach out to them. And thank you. That's a really good tip. Anybody else have any other thoughts?
Well, he can say no, you know.
What's that?
I said he could say no, you know.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Joe Kennedy responds about 9/11, so.
What
did you say? Joe Kennedy, Senator Joe Kennedy, well, he's running for senator. He responds on 9/11 in Boston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What do you mean he responds on it? What do you mean that he responds on it?
Children's Defense? Is that
Children's Health Defense?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Does anyone have an interest in hearing more about the Las Vegas Mandalay Bay thing? Because there is somebody who has researched that that I can reach out to.
I would love that.
What did you ask, Cheryl?
On the Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas attacks, shooting. Anyone interested in hearing more about that? And someone said they would love that.
Yeah. That was me. That was Craig. Yes, definitely.
Oh, okay, Craig. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I would too.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right, great. I'll look into that too then. All right. If you think of anything else, you know, just email us, okay? Because we're open to anything and everybody. Well, not everybody,
okay.
But.
There's a pilot. I can't think of his name. Can you hear me? This is Jerry.
Yes.
Very well, yeah.
Thank you. There is a pilot. I can't think of his name. He just tried to have a radio show, and I think he lives in another country with his wife, but he was the pilot for 9/11 Truth. And I can't remember his name. Dan?
Hanley?
Something. Yes. He might be a good guy to have on. I still think in the air, what happened in the air that day is the most important part of the day, you know.
Yeah.
If those planes were intercepted or whatever the hell happened that day, I think, you know, we're losing the pilots because they're dying off and stuff, and I think they're, and a lot of their links are dead on their website. They don't open anymore. So I think if we could talk to pilots, it seems kind of important to me.
Okay. So,
yeah.
All right, any other thoughts? Thank you for that, Sherry. Any other thoughts? All right, well then, I guess, just email us if you think of anything over the next, couple weeks. And then our next night will be December 4th, Wednesday, December 4th, and I hope everyone can join us then. Thank you very much for all attending tonight, and we'll see you next month, or December 4th.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Okay.
Bye. Happy Halloween.
Bye, everyone.